Of the Hornets, go.
And everything that we do every day, we want to be a champion.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
It's the same place they play so far.
Everything with an attitude.
Alabama, you listen.
I don't give a shit who we're playing.
Don't let the Vegas play against. And Vegas has to win. That's our framework. That's our MO as a team.
Richardson breaks free on the sideline.
This is a mauling, folks, a mauling.
Fear the tide, honey badger.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Tom, so I guess Alabama's a second half team now, huh?
Man, they definitely found their rhythm in the second half. I think they kind of realized that they made adjustments at halftime. You know, I think the most interesting thing about this is you know, they had to abandon the running game for all intents and purposes just because their inability to establish a ground game. And fortunately, they've got a special talent in Tua, or I think this would have been a very different football game.
Yeah, I agree. You know, the fact that, you know, he throws up 377, well, not just Tua. Tua threw up 324, you know, passing yards, five touchdowns. You know, you can bail a lot of water. You know, Alabama only, you could say only mustered 59 plays, but scored 52 points. So that's almost a point of play. That's pretty efficient play. And then right on the button, 500 yards of offense. You know, you could talk the distribution. I like the big passing number. I wish the rushing number were a little bit bigger. But at the end of the day, I'm going to be pretty good with a 31-point win over Auburn, huh?
No, absolutely, man. We won't see this much in our lifetime. You know, interestingly enough, you know, when they played Mississippi State, they ran 72 plays, and 45 of those was rushing attempts. But yet they only averaged 3 yards a game, 3 yards a carry. Josh Jacobs almost got 100 yards in that game, but you know, 45 of their 72 plays were running plays, but yet they were only able to average 3.2 yards. Well, interestingly enough, in this game, you know, they had right at 60 plays, like you said, 59 plays, but only 26 of them were running plays, and four of those was, you know, Tua keeping the ball. So you really only had 22 plays designed for your running backs to carry the ball. And obviously, we know Mississippi State has a good front. We know Auburn has a good front. So I guess what I'm saying is that against these really good defensive lines, I think this offensive line is more comfortable with their pass blocking than their run blocking.
Yeah, I agree. I think there was a lot of excitement about, you know, the ground game, like you said, against Mississippi State. And you know, I wonder if that was the exception because we don't see a dominant run game, but you know, it is a different animal, the run block and in the pass block. And so, you know, always going to be happy that we can do one of them well. And especially glad that talent is lined up with the quarterback and receiving core we've got. So, if that's where they're gonna double down, I think that's probably the right play given the mix of talent on this team.
Oh yeah, the fact that Tua threw five touchdowns out of 25 completions, you know, he's obviously a special kid. We've talked about this, right? He's a Peyton Manning type of football player. Only a few handful of these guys, you know, come along, and so obviously, you know, his ability to throw the ball made this game very different. You know, the fact that we had the ball for only 25 minutes and scored 52 points. I mean, come on, man, you and I have not seen that in our lifetime. And, you know, we might never see that again in a couple years.
No, I think this whole, I agree, right? This is one of those moments. And we say this on the podcast, you know, with some regularity that we need to celebrate the now. We need to celebrate this Saban era. And this is a particular slice of that era that is even sweeter than some of the rest of it, right? This is a new sort of personality, a new sort of identity that the Alabama offense is demonstrating. And I don't know if this is going to be the wave of the future or if this is a blip that we're getting now. But I think you're right. We should enjoy the heck out of this right now while we've got it.
Oh, absolutely, man. And you and I were obviously there live and was able to get a good perspective being in the stands. But, you know, the commentators said at the beginning of this football game that in the past 11 years, 10 of those years, Alabama has come into this Auburn game ranked number one or number two. Mm-hmm. 10 out of 11 years. And so when we talk about this train ride and this train ride, you better enjoy it. I mean, it's an embarrassment of riches, right? I mean, come on. 10 out of 11 years, you've come into the last game of your season ranked number one or number two. And so, obviously, I'm just glad that we are along for the ride and able to experience it. Tell me what's one of the first things that jumped out at you on offense?
I don't know that there was a singular thing. We talked about the play of Tua and without sort of belaboring his play, maybe the thing that because so much of what happened on offense was sort of intertwined with his play, and I know we'll unpack some of it. But let's talk about the first score, which was the Tua run for the touchdown. We talk about, running your star receiver on the end around, and, what do you think about Tua with, we've known sort of some knee injuries or lower leg injuries just anyways. What do you think about a design run on the goal line?
I'm not a big fan. I'm sure that it caught Auburn off guard. But you've got four talented running backs on this team and you have a host of talented receivers to run the end around play that we don't, not the days of Calvin Ridley and Julio Jones, when Julio Jones would run it and he's the only guy that you have. And it's like, why are you doing that? So I'm not a fan. I think they could have scored other ways. Obviously after he scored, he did his celebration jump with one of the players. And it's like, we just went over this a couple weeks ago. You don't need to be doing that. I'm not a fan. I think we could have scored another way.
Yeah, I tend to land in that camp as well. Let's not take the risk. This is early in the game. We're not that desperate for points right now. I mean, I know we want to, take the lead and all of those things. I think that I can see both sides of the argument, but I firmly plant my feet in one. I can see the conversation sort of unfold that says, they won't see this coming. When we're lined up in the goal line, it's tight. It's short real estate. What can we do that they will not expect? Well, they'll never expect that we're going to run Tua on the outside, given the second half of the season with his injuries. They will be overly protective of him, and so they will do something else. We don't necessarily have to worry about defending that, and so I can see that. And so I can see where you might would want to make a decision based on that. It is just not a decision I would make, and you as well, right? And so I would agree that at that position on the field, we have other options. Let's fake something, run one way and sweep it the other way. Let's do a toss sweep action, something that I'm confident with the weapons, the tools that we have, that we could do something that did not entail running Tua in that position. I'm glad we got a touchdown. I'm glad he got up. I'm glad he's healthy. I like sort of the gamesmanship and thinking creative ways to score. I just would have said, yep, that's nice. We're not doing it.
Did you notice a brace on his knee?
I did not. I noticed one last week.
Yeah, so that makes you wonder, right? Because obviously we think there's something still there. He didn't seem to be favoring. He didn't seem to be limping quite as much in this game, coming back and forth to the huddle and that kind of stuff and to the line of scrimmage. And so that does make you wonder behind the scenes, what treatment he has had in the past couple weeks. Because he seemed in the best condition he could be since the LSU game.
Yes, and I would say early in the LSU game because he took a couple of shots there and you saw him favor a little bit. And so here the last couple of weeks and even the Mississippi State game, you talked about the touchdown celebration where he jumps up. He was quoted as saying in that game he jumped up and even while he was in midair he was thinking, oh, this is going to hurt to land, and then he comes back and all the sort of breathless anticipation, how much is he going to play in the Citadel game? And he ends up playing a good portion of it with no brace, and same here in the Iron Bowl. And it's one of those things, if you didn't know he had been injured or had demonstrated an injury, then you wouldn't know. And so if you just turned on and watched these last two games, you would wonder what all of the, you know, all the talk was about him being injured, because there's no brace and there's no visual evidence of an injury. So I don't know if he is recovered or is managing sort of the discomfort better. I don't know what it is. And I still say there's a thread of this narrative that we're going to hear about, you know, in the offseason, but I'd rather see him healthy than out there gimping around. I just want us to respect that health and not put it at jeopardy.
No, absolutely. Well, hey, take a quick second and touch on, obviously we didn't run the ball much, right? Obviously we, I guess, just felt like that we were having more, you know, we're having more success throwing the ball. But yet, Damian Harris only gets 9 carries on the day and Josh Jacobs gets only 5. Mm-hmm. But yet, on our first possession of the game, Damian Harris ran the ball 3 times. First down, first play of the game, he runs for 5 yards. Next time on a 1st and 10, he runs for 3 yards. The next time on a 1st and 10, he runs for 5 yards. The only reason I'm pointing this out for the listeners is because, you know, we got 3 first downs on that first drive before we had to punt the ball. We didn't have a third down until that last, you know, series. We had a 7-play sequence there at the beginning of the game. Well, 2 of the 1st and 10 plays, he ran for 5 yards, man, which teams would take all day long. And only the other – so on first down, on 1st and 10, the 3 1st and 10s we had on that first sequence, he got the ball all 3 1st and 10s. And basically had, what, 3 carries for 13 yards, which is not too bad. But yet he only saw the ball 6 more times the rest of the football game. You know, we what do you think about that? I mean, like looking back at the actual yards he got on that first series, wasn't that bad. Like, why do you think we kind of abandoned, you know, that, like we talk about scripting the first 10 or 15 plays, right? It's like they just tore them up in little pieces on the sideline and said, okay, what were we thinking with our first plays? We didn't like getting 5 yards on these carries, and so let's go do something else.
Well, yeah, it's interesting, right? And I think it goes, I think there's a parallel to the Mississippi State game where the first 2 possessions, Alabama had success running the ball on the ground and sort of running right at some of the star key defenders, and then we went away from that, and there was a lull in that game when we were trying to get the passing game going, and, you know, did to some extent, but a lesser extent, and you know, 14 of the, what is it, 24 points we scored in that game, we scored on the first two possessions. The parallel here is we didn't score on the first possession. We didn't continue, you know, sort of running the ball for multiple possessions, but we did have success doing it. And so you think, why does that not translate? I don't know. I want to think, you know, schematically Auburn is making some adjustments. And I also think we're seeing bigger opportunities in the pass game, you know, for more chunk yards, and that we want to really, you know, spread the margin, put some points, spread the field. And I think Saban for a little bit is, he would never say this out loud. If he writes a book when he retires, then we might hear about it there. But I think Saban fashions himself wanting a Heisman quarterback, and that he might see that cherry on that as a cherry on top. And certainly something that could springboard future recruiting. And if there's anything that's the shiny object to Saban, it's recruiting. And I just think there's connective tissue there. I think he's enjoying this. And I think that if he can have a Heisman winning quarterback, then I think there's part of him that would be really excited about that. And I think he goes that way in the play calling, or allows Locksley to go that way in the play calling. So I think there's something there. I don't know if I'm just making up something on the fly. You can sort of react to that, but I think there's something there.
No, there could be just because, you know, we talked about Tua being, you know, looking healthy or healthier, you know, some of his receivers looked a little healthier, right, in this game. And, you know, in the days of old, when we would throw the ball to Calvin Ridley for 8 times or Amari Cooper for 9 times or Julio Jones for 10 times, right? I mean, teams could just stick their best corner on them. Well, dude, what's really crazy about these stats is they're getting these guys are getting theirs without having to be greedy. Jerry Jeudy, 5 catches, but he got a touchdown. Jalen Waddle, 3 catches, but he got a touchdown. Devonta Smith, 4, but he got a touchdown. Ruggs, you only got 5 catches, but you got 2 touchdowns. And Josh Jacobs, you got 4 catches, but you got 1 touchdown. And so, dude, all of these guys got a touchdown with less than 5 catches. Yeah. And then you talk about because he throws them open, right? I mean, Jerry Jeudy, long catch, 46. Waddle, 53. Devonta Smith, 40. Josh Jacobs, 33. Dude, we had 4 receivers who had a catch longer than 30 yards. Hell, if I throw Ruggs in there with a 22-yarder, which is still an explosive play, I mean, you just can't defend that. I mean, just to have all of these guys at his disposal, I mean, I guess that also feeds into your point, right? Is Saban was smart enough to go with Tua in the second half of that national championship game, and he's smart enough right now to say, you know, I love my running backs and I love what they can do, but, you know, let's go with the hot hand.
I agree with that. Is there something, this is another sort of theory we can bat back across, is there something to the notion, the idea that says, hey, we have these weapons. It's not like we're trying to force a passing game that doesn't exist. So we have these weapons. Is it as simple as saying we can line up and out bravado this team and over the, the Tigers, and over the course of the game, you know, they've got a physical front. We can be physical up front and we can sort of grind it out against them and maybe throw some play action off of that. And so we can have that type of offense here, and we can do that, and we can win a lower scoring game. And at the end of the day, we can thump our chest because we beat them up at the line of scrimmage. But then what do we have left in the tank next week to go play Georgia? And so you could say, and maybe this is sort of a, call it an evolution of Coach Saban, but why do I want to grind myself into a grist right here when we can throw the ball over their heads, have success, and be as fresh as we can possibly be going into the SEC championship next week? What do you make of that?
I think there's something to that. I think there's also something to this offensive line that we've talked about, that they just seem more comfortable with their pass blocking, mm-hmm. you know, than their run blocking. And, you know, this might be one of the best fronts that they will, you know, that they've gone against so far. But it's just like Mississippi State, man. I mean, Mississippi State had only given up, you know, what, 9 rushing touchdowns all year. We had 2 in the first quarter. We're up 21-0 at halftime, and we only get 3 points the whole second half. Well, guess what? In that game, you know, Tua only had 164 yards passing.
Right.
And so, to your point, you talk about, you know, because he has so many weapons and because of the RPO game and how smart and intelligent Tua is at reading that. You know, like I was seeing a breakdown that was talking about on one play how, you know, not in the Auburn game, but one earlier game this season, they were doing the RPO, and basically, you know, they had 2 deep safeties, the other team did, and one of the safeties needed to drop down on Irv Smith, and he was about 10 yards off. And because Tua does such a good ball fake in the RPO game, mm-hmm. that the safety had to go look at that running back and take a step toward the right side where the fake was going. And so then he had no chance of getting back over to the guy in the slot who caught an easy pass because Tua throws him open, right? He hits him in stride. He can throw through a freaking keyhole. And it was like an 8-yard gain. And the commentator on the SEC network was like, how do you stop this?
Right.
He was like, there's no way you can stop this. They can do this all day long. And now it's 2nd and 2. And so it's probably a combination of all of these factors, is that you've got an accurate quarterback who can throw you open, who can get yards after the catch. He's got an embarrassment of wide receivers at his disposal. You've got a young offensive line who hasn't shown an ability, right, to have a 300-yard day on the ground. And so it's probably all of those factors.
Right. Right. No, that's interesting. You had an interesting comment when Jalen Hurts threw his touchdown pass to Jalen Waddle. You suggested that Waddle had an extra gear, and I had an interesting theory on that. Why don't you share that with us?
You know, man, Saban doesn't like to put up, you know, he doesn't like to get over that 50 point barometer, right? He does not care for that. And so, when Jalen came into the game, it was first and 10 at the Alabama 47. And I was thinking, okay, are they going to let him take a shot here? And it was already 45-21. And so kind of like, you know, when Jerry Jeudy play that Jalen had, he hits Waddle across the middle. You know, Waddle has a crease. He kicks it into gear like everybody says Jerry Jeudy does after he receives the ball. Maybe he's been, you know, taking tips from Jerry Jeudy. But he just has a different motor about him to go, you know, go around the defender and take the sideline. That, you know, Waddle knew that this was the last pass, or maybe he knew this was the last pass play that Saban was going to allow Locksley to call.
Right.
And sure enough, you know, after that play got to 52 points, you know, ironically, they only had three plays the rest of the game after that play. You know, there was only three offensive plays after that. So it's kind of just funny just to think that maybe Waddle said, hey, man, let me get this while I can because this is my only chance to get a touchdown.
No, I agree. I think that, you know, a couple of thoughts there. I think that I agree. Saban doesn't like to run up the score and sort of there's a persona he has there. Again, I think it's one of those things that there's some teams, there's some circumstances he doesn't mind it so much. And, you know, if he can sort of turn the screws on Auburn a little bit, I think that's okay, especially coming off the loss to them last year. And certainly a team that he knows he has to face head up in recruiting for a lot of the in-state talent. He doesn't mind hanging that 50 on them and making that look a little more pretty. So I'm cool with that. But could you imagine, and this is a conjecture thing, it's sort of same topic, flipping gears a little bit. Can you imagine the conversation on the headsets where maybe Locksley gets into a player's ear and says, hey, coach is only going to let us do this one or two more times, so let's make it count.
That is funny. Hey, no, that's for sure. Hey, I want to take a second and talk about, obviously Damian Harris is a very talented running back and obviously has meant a great deal to this program and, you know, finished, you know, going back to our running comment, you know, Damian on his 9 carries finished with 4.6 yard average, which isn't bad. Josh Jacobs on 5 carries had a 5.6, which isn't bad. But on Josh Jacobs' touchdown pass, Damian Harris is very astute at receiving the ball out of the backfield. And, you know, last year it was like, okay, they were trying to get Josh Jacobs on the field and he was banged up and how can we get him involved with all the talented running backs, et cetera, kind of deal. But it seems like, you know, Damian had one catch on the day and Josh Jacobs had four. And it does seem like while Damian is very astute at catching the ball out of the backfield, Josh Jacobs just has a real special knack for that, right? Yeah. Yeah. And so on his one touchdown pass, Dave, that he caught, man, I just want to get your perspective being in the stands of how, you know, he made not a great pass from – he made Tua look good. Because obviously Tua had thrown over his outside shoulder and Josh Jacobs had turned on his inside shoulder. But just talk about for the listeners the adjustments he made on that play and just what you thought about that.
Yeah, I agree. I think that, you know, he is a more natural receiver. And I think that he's a more naturally versatile player than Damian. And that doesn't mean I don't like Damian. And that doesn't mean Damian is not a talented runner. That, you know, both things can be true. I just think that sort of extra measure of versatility, you get that with Jacobs. I think he looked like a wide receiver. And you know, that's sort of the comment that I wrote, you know, in my notes. I, you know, definitely wanted to touch upon that. He looked natural. You know, sometimes running backs, they can be effective in the running game, but it's a wheel route or it's not sort of a downfield passing attack where they're used. To the fact that we would even run Jacobs on sort of a down the field, you know, stretch the field kind of play is itself something, and that gives you the matchup options that you want, right? And just his play on the ball, because it was positioned, it's one of those things, right? It was positioned where only he could catch it, but it was going to take a good catch because the coverage was good. And he adjusted and made that catch. Had it been another running back, and I say this, and I don't say this to denigrate anyone, they all have uniquely different skill sets. I don't know that he would have thrown the ball had it been another running back in that exact route. I think that he would have looked at it and said, he's covered, I'm moving. And he saw Jacobs there and said, oh, Jacobs can catch this. And he put it there. That's that would be my take on the situation. It was not a perfectly placed ball, but that's a function of the defense, and it was placed there because he knew that Jacobs could make a legitimate stab at it. And I don't think that he would have done that for another running back.
And not only did he make the adjustment to his outside shoulder, but then he had to make a cut, to make a defender miss to score.
Yes.
And you watch that play when he finished that play, and you're just thinking, wow, I don't know about a lot of guys. You see that play and you think with the stable of talented running backs, you're like, okay, to your point, right, I guess, that whole sequence there, is he the only back of the four talented running backs that could have made that play? And I think maybe so.
Yeah. And I think that you see that kind of play, and we can talk later on about the NFL draft and the players and who's going to declare and all of that. I just, we're going to unpack that later. But just the comment that I would make is there's a lot of NFL teams, especially in how the game is changing in the NFL. There's a lot of teams that are going to look at a play like that from Jacobs and say, I want one of those.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, because that could, because that could bail out a quarterback, big time for sure.
Right. Right.
What else jumped out at you? What other offensive moments do you want to kind of touch on?
Without giving away my mini game ball, I'll just double down on the receivers and everyone getting a turn. You said this before, but it definitely is, I think, worth reiterating. I think we had 9 or 8 different pass catchers, which is significant. We have definitely had games where we've had, maybe one guy with 12 catches, one guy with 2, and 3 guys with 1, and a very skewed passing distribution. And the numbers here, they weren't smooth, but there was a smoothness to them. No one was, far and above, 77, 62, 72, 73, 53 yards, all with touchdowns, at least one. Just the distribution there, it makes that there's so much more field to defend. And those are just the guys that call touchdowns. Irv Smith is a known quantity as a weapon. And so you have to allocate to him, which is going to invariably make someone else is going to be open. And you take the Belichick or the Saban philosophy that says, we're going to take away your best offensive weapon. We're going to take away your best receiver. You could legitimately tell a team, pick one and take them away. Great. Thank you. Because there's so many of them that you can't cover them all. And then on top of that, you take a quarterback that can throw it anywhere on the field and then can put it in that keyhole. Like you said, it makes, there's sort of dimensions to the field gets bigger. And not only does the bigger field get bigger, but we can throw it in tighter windows within that bigger field, which means you can't just kind of cover someone. You have to really cover someone. And so the field gets bigger as it gets bigger. This passing offense is something to behold.
Absolutely. Well, hey, man, on the Damian Harris watch, because obviously, he had the big run against Citadel, which, helped the stats in that game. And I wish maybe he could have got a few more carries to go with that.
Yep.
He's sitting there at 719 yards on the season, with an average of 6.1 yards per carry, which is not bad. And so it'll be interesting to see how he's used against Georgia. Obviously against LSU, he had 19 carries. Arkansas here, it says 15 carries, Mississippi State 14 carries. So the only games where he's really gotten a lot of carries has been Arkansas, you know, LSU and Mississippi State. So I'll be curious to see, you know, if he, how he's handled in this Georgia game, because he's still within a shot, man, at 719 yards. I mean, he's got two games left to play, hopefully. And
hopefully three.
I hope he gets it.
Hopefully three.
Hopefully three. And so he's got his career now. He's 2,916 yards.
Yeah.
So, I hope he gets it.
Yeah, I do too. I hope he gets that as well. You know, one thing that could sort of play in, not that Saban intentionally tries to preserve players, but I think he does think about that in a way that maybe a younger version of him did not. I think that is something that is not a thought. Obviously, we don't want to injure someone, but there's not a play count. There's not a thinking about next week with the SEC championship game. You know, hopefully we still have two more games, but they're a month away. You know, this is the 1st of December, and it's, you know, it's the end of the month before the first round of the playoffs. And so certainly we hope we're in that. So I think that I think sort of no holds barred in that respect. And, you know, hopefully that does translate into some more carries. I think, you know, Georgia has, I don't know if I have enough data points to sort of double down on this, but sometimes Saban will play a team, and if they like to do something, Saban will say, well, we're kind of good at that too. And so if Georgia is sort of known for their running game, there's a little bit of me that, you know, Saban might be thinking, well, I guess, you know, everybody's talking about Georgia's running game. I guess we might as well show them that we can do it too. So I wouldn't be surprised if there wasn't, I wouldn't say a heavy lean, but I wouldn't be surprised if there was a little bit of a lean towards a running game against the Bulldogs.
Well, that would be good, man. Well, give me your mini game ball so I don't take yours.
Well, I'm gonna do something I did similar a couple of weeks ago. I'm gonna give it to Henry Ruggs, and not for his play as a wide receiver, you know, pass catcher, but for his play as a blocker. He had at least, and I'm sure there are more, we could go back and break down the film, but he had at least three significant blocks, two at the goal line, one definitely preserved, and I think, in fact, all three at the goal line, but one definitely preserved a touchdown, and then he blocked on for one or two of his runs as well. And so I just want to give hats off to Henry Ruggs doing the work downfield. It was a couple of weeks ago only that he got sort of run up on and hurt his leg while he was blocking. And so the fact that he sort of has some perseverance there. And I also like, you know, he's playing to a standard. This has to be something that Saban sort of has a lot of pride for. He doesn't block only when he thinks it's going to contribute to the touchdown. It's his default mode is I'm going to block. And then if it helps, it helps. If it doesn't, it doesn't. But I've done what I'm supposed to do. And because there was one of those where maybe he didn't need to do the block, but he did it. He was there. There was a defender block. And I just like that. I like that. He's down the field. He's pursuing the ball. We saw him. Wasn't it him much earlier in the season where Irv fumbled the ball and Ruggs picked it up. He demonstrates a pursuit, I think, unlike any receiver that we've seen, certainly in recent times. And so I'm giving a big nod to the pursuit blocker that is Henry Ruggs.
Well, and he's a very physical player, right? I mean, he's 6 foot, 183 pounds, but yet he plays very physical.
Yes, surprisingly physical given his size. Yes. And what he's really known for is a blazing, you know, speedster. You don't get that in one package. You don't. I mean, how long have we been watching football? Yeah. You don't get that in one package.
No, you don't. And, you know, hometown Montgomery, Alabama. So glad he didn't go, you know, glad he came to the Crimson Tide. But, you know, he's sitting there on the season with 39 catches, but 10 touchdowns.
Right.
10 touchdowns, David, out of 39 catches.
Well, he's a playmaker. Oh, remember last season, at one point in the season last year, he had 5 catches for 5 touchdowns. I mean, the dude, you know, when the ball's in his hand, he makes things happen.
And the touchdown, and one of the touchdowns, real quick, David, that he caught, man, I just have to say, it was also not a fabulous throw by Tua. He made a phenomenal catch.
Oh, phenomenal catch.
Phenomenal catch.
Could I mean, you say that? Let me ask this.
That was a great freaking catch that I don't think that maybe some other people – what you said about Josh Jacobs might be true on that pass as well. He said, okay, Ruggs will catch this. Let me put it over there.
Yes. I think that's true. And let me – this will sound even strange to my ear, but is Ruggs one of the – this will even sound silly. Is Ruggs one of the underrated receivers on the team? Because, you know, Jerry Jeudy, right? And then Devonta had the catch last year, for the title game. And so everyone sort of remembers Smitty for that. Jalen Waddle, sort of the new shiny toy. And, God, there's still Henry Ruggs. Does it almost feel that way a little bit?
Oh, I think he is currently probably viewed as the third or fourth receiver by some teams in the scouting and all. Yes. And so that goes to their effectiveness, right? Just because of all the weapons that they have.
That's a dangerous decision for a defensive coordinator to make, because if you start to treat him that way, then that's represented by who you cover him with, right? And Ruggs is so fast that if you put the wrong guy on him,
if they're just running all day.
I mean, he's that fast.
Yes, but they're so talented at wide receiver, man. What do you do? If they're all healthy, which is why when two of them got banged up the other day, that was a problem. Okay.
Yes.
Because this train is based on, if you've got Jeudy and Smith and Ruggs in the game, and then you bring in Waddle, and then you have Jacobs in the backfield with Damian Harris or Najee Harris in a split look, you do. You can't cover them all. I mean, there's just no way.
And then rotate in Irv Smith, right?
Oh, absolutely, man. Well, hey, I'm gonna give my mini game ball to Deontay Brown. I was so glad to see him back in there, just because the continuity that he seemed to bring, you know, in the when he was in there, you know, when he went out before his absence. And you know, I will say too, I want to give a little kudos to the for at least how they handled things from the standpoint of basically pass protection. And I guess what I mean by that is this is a really good Auburn defense.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Really good defense. And they had one sack on the day. You know, two guys shared a sack. And so, you know, quarterback hurries on the day, Dave, was one. One. So you have one quarterback hurry and you have one sack against this defensive line. So kudos to them, because they're showing an ability to protect him. Now, granted, he's got eyes in the back of his head, and his ability to move in the pocket and all is obviously preventing a couple sacks from happening.
Sure.
But they still performed pretty well in the passing game, in this football game.
No, I think you're right. And I know we're in the mini game segment, so I'll kind of reach back up a little bit. But, you know, I think an irony, and I think you're right, right? The offensive line pass blocked, you know, very well. Tua is very instinctive in the pocket and sort of feeling the pressure, having a clock in his head when he needs to do so. All of those things that not all quarterbacks have. I thought it was – it's interesting, and I just love – the irony is delicious, where he got into a rhythm when we picked up the pace on offense. And so for Gus and Auburn and tempo and all of sort of the bluster about that, when we sped up even just a little bit, that's when we caught them with their pants down. That just tastes really good.
No, that is hilarious. Well, hey, flip the field on defense, man. I was very concerned when Bugs went down.
Yes.
Obviously, you know, he spent a lot of time on the bicycle and talk to the listeners. We had talked about, they brought him back in for two different situations on a third down play to see if he could go, and he just couldn't go. So hopefully is just a hyperextended knee. And hopefully, you know, hopefully he'll be able to go some in the Georgia game. But that was the first thing that jumped out at me is, you know, that's a guy we can't afford to lose.
Absolutely. And we lost him early enough where we've got to sort this out. Right. And I was watching. Now he went down and stayed down and, you know, he finally got up and he was sort of hobbling on the leg, but I don't necessarily read, you know, was he putting weight in it, all your weight on it and all of that. Obviously, if they're not putting any weight on it, or if they haul him off on the cart, obviously, you know, sort of bets are off there. But when they put, you know, some weight on it, that doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to be okay or that they're going to be able to come back. And so I was specifically, you know, with sort of a tinge of doubt, I was looking for Isaiah Buggs and I did not see him back out. Now that just means I didn't see the couple of plays because I'm watching other things too. Multiple times, Fildarian Mathis caught my eye because, you know, he's sporting number 48. And so I'd see 48, you know, in there. And I think, is that Ruggs? And he sort of straightened out his jersey and okay, that is an 8, not a 9. And so, you know, but to your point, you know, you saw him and he just wasn't effective. To me, that means a couple of things. It starts with a big sigh of relief that, okay, it wasn't so bad that he clearly was not going to come back in. It's something that, hey, if you're right enough to give it a go, okay, that's good. And even if giving it a go didn't necessarily work, then if you were at least right enough to give it a go, then you're going to be significantly more ready given a week. And so that was something I was really pleased with. And then I'll kind of take that and go in a little different direction. With Buggs being out, we really needed to rely and lean on the depth at the defensive line, which has been a weakness, especially early in the season. And I think, and we can unpack this a little bit, I was intrigued very rarely this late in the season, do we see something that we've not seen before? And to my knowledge, this is the first time that we shifted to a dime. So six defensive backs, normally Dylan Moses is the one that goes off the field. And we keep our three down linemen. Against Auburn, at least twice, we rotated out a defensive lineman and kept three linebackers in the game when we went to dime. And there may be some obscure point at another time during the game or during the season where that has happened. It has not happened to that I called it out or that I noticed it. And so I thought that was unique that we saw that. We went to a dime with two down linemen, an extra linebacker in. And so, you know, during the game, you know, I think we both kind of like, is that rotation or is that, you know, preserving rotation or on the defensive line? Or is that sort of coverage on the back end with an extra linebacker versus a DL in coverage? And I think we said, well, it could be both because we don't know. What's sort of your thought on that? And I just thought that was a curious observation.
Yeah, just thinking about that a little bit further, I think it probably was. I would probably land on the depth side because it bugs, you know, injury happened early again on those two third down plays and got double teamed, which I thought was hilarious. And he couldn't even put weight on it kind of deal. Like he was like jogging, but yet, you know, he was the only guy double teamed on those two plays. And we got to the quarterback both times, which was hilarious. So it made me wonder if the second time he was just serving as a decoy. But I do think it was probably a depth thing. You know, to that point, I found it interesting that who got the most run when that did happen was LeBrian Ray. And so, you know, obviously, you know, Johnny Dwight has done good things. Mathis has done good things. But of all the guys, LeBrian Ray seized his moment and, finished tied with Dylan Moses for the top on the team with 9 tackles. You know, he was in on 9 tackles on the game and, 2 of those being solo. And so therefore he was involved on, you know, 7, you know, seven efforts where he was, you know, doing some game tackling and flying to the ball. And so kudos to him, because, you know, if Bugs is able to come back and go against Georgia, having LeBryan Ray to break that up a little bit is a big deal.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think the same with Mathis, that he's come on this season. You know, they are two different body types, Mathis and LeBryan Ray, but I like how they both contribute. I like how they both, you know, immediately stepped in. Johnny Dwight got more run, and we're hearing more and more, you know, of his participation. So, you know, that's good. That's good to see. I think that, and I don't want to think about next season too much, but one of the things that sort of scares me is the defensive line next season. And so to see LeBryan Ray and Fildarian Mathis get some run and some contribution, at least makes me feel a little bit better. I think we've got a ways to go there, but, you know, we don't have to worry about that today. But yeah, LeBryan Ray, he's an exciting young player. I wouldn't be surprised. I want to be careful with this. I don't think he's going to be, you know, the explosion on the scene like Quinn has this season, but I think LeBryan Ray is positioned to have that, to have a step up. And so he may not, you know, sort of reach the same mountain peak, but I think he's primed for a step up when he is more in a full-time rotation role.
Absolutely. Well, I wanted to point out those guys because we obviously shorten the bench in games like this. And so you lose Bugs, but yet you're shortening the bench. And so, you know, guys like, you know, Anoma did not come in, you know, till the end of the game.
Later, yep.
And yep. So, you know, I just found that interesting. I want to touch on Raekwon Davis for a minute because Sure. Obviously, you know, he's a very physically gifted player. Obviously, you know, he's made a lot of contributions to this team. But I think he had a really good game. There were several plays in their little bubble screen game where, you know, he was down the field, 6 yards down the field, making a tackle that could have been a 20-yard play had he not made the tackle. And, you know, he was asked to play a lot more in this game because of Bugs' injury. And so I just want to touch on Raekwon Davis. I think he played a hell of a football game.
Yeah, he had a really fine game. You know, we're talking about DLs and it's, you know, it's hard not to talk about the 6'7", you know, 315 fella. Yeah, he's a monster and certainly demonstrated that on Saturday. So so that was good to see. Sort of the queued up big baller, Quinnen. His numbers weren't, you know, sort of off the charts today or Saturday, but, you know, he did have three tackles, a sack, a TFL, and two hurries. So he's still sort of filling up the stat sheet.
Oh, absolutely, man. And let's talk about Anfernee Jennings real quick. I mean, the interception that he made, you know, Stidham came into this football game, Dave, with only 4 interceptions the entire season.
Yes.
And so out of 11 football games, he had only thrown 4 picks. And so he protects the football. And so, you know, in this play for Jennings to come back, that wasn't Jennings' guy. For Jennings to be able to read the quarterback's eyes and go back and make that play, a very athletic catch, was huge. And, you know, he finished obviously with a great day with 8 tackles, 3rd on the stat sheet. He was asked to play a whole lot. Is Davis and Quinnen Williams, all 3 of these guys, you know, Christian Miller, let's not forget, all these guys were asked to step up and play a whole lot more. But, you know, we were talking earlier about Auburn's great defensive front, and they had 1 quarterback hurry on the day. Well, dude, would you have ever guessed with the talent that Auburn has up front, okay, that they would finish this game with 1 quarterback hurry and we would finish with 8 quarterback hurries?
No.
Now, I would definitely. Real quick, Tua attempted 32 passes, okay, 32 attempts. Stidham had 30, so very similar. Mm-hmm. But yet we had 8 quarterback hurries and they had 1.
And they were, you could reason that they were more effective running the ball. And yes. So,
yes,
you think about slowing down a pass rush because of more effective running game. Yeah. I mean, you definitely, you know, definitely would have thought there'd be maybe not equal even, but more of an even, cause that's a pretty diverse, you know, metric. You know, you mentioned Jennings. I wonder, he's seems to really be coming on. The last couple of weeks, he has really come on and contributed. And, you know, like you sort of run through his stats, you know, he had a pass deflection, a hurry, a sack, and a tackle for loss as well. I mean, he was filling it up. I don't know if that wasn't his best day, you know, competing for, you know, Alabama. If it's not, it's in the top two. That was an outstanding performance. And I think if he is hitting a stride, boy, that's a good time to do it.
No, absolutely. Well, you know, we haven't talked on this yet, but just want to touch on briefly. There were some calls that you know, there were calls on both sides that, yep, you know, could have landed either way, right? You know, we have Auburn gets a big holding call early in the game that obviously could have affected their momentum, which you don't see that call very often. You know, Carter has a play, a pass defense that could have been called a pass interference, right? Where he literally just pushed the guy with both hands, you know, 35 yards down the field before he approached the receiver to try to deflect the ball. So that was an interesting call that was fortunate to go our way. What do you think about the long touchdown when Auburn got their third touchdown there, you know, in the third quarter? Savion Smith had played a really good game up until that point, and he had really played well against their sweep runs and you know, being the outside guy, you know, not letting them get the edge, et cetera, and, you know, fighting off the wide receiver and making good plays against the run, et cetera. And obviously he had a good game, two pass defenses. But what do you think happened on that long touchdown play? Was it offensive pass interference? Were they just letting them play and he got out physical and got off of his mark? What do you think happened there?
I think and I think similar to, you know, the Shy Carter play, I think they were letting them play a little bit. Shy got a little handsy, but it wasn't so bad, you know. But to your point, I've seen less called, and I've seen worse not called, right? And so that was right in there. And, you know, maybe if they call it, then, you know, the thought is, man, let them play a little bit. So, I think the call with Savion probably is pretty similar. Was there something there? Yeah, probably. Was it worthy of calling? I don't know. I sort of let them play is my thought. I think there were multiple times the Alabama secondary, or let me rephrase that, the Alabama defense, you know, gave up their coverage and they let someone go. You know, Mack Wilson did that when the running back coming out of the backfield. You know, we saw that on the sort of the throwback, the double pass. You know, they let the coverage guy go. I think those are, you know, certainly they contributed to big plays for Auburn. But I think they are so coachable and so, I want to say easy, but those are pretty straightforward things for the Alabama defensive coaches to sort of buckle down. Hey, stay in coverage, you know, until the ball crosses the line of scrimmage, until we're on sort of mad pursuit for a runner, stay in coverage. And if that means they get 12 yards, then that's better than them getting, you know, 50 and a touchdown. So I think that is highly coachable. And I think we'll start to see that sort of tighten down. Also think we won't see so much gimmickry. You know, what do we used to call it? Tricky dick offense from, you know, that's just Auburn, right? It's just what they do. And so you can almost bank on them burning you once on something like that. But, I don't know. I don't know that I would have thrown a flag against Auburn there. I don't know that I would have thrown the flag against Shy. And I think in general, you know, we just needed to get back down to some basics on, hey, we let a couple of guys leak through for big plays. We need to not do that.
Well, to your point, right, on the big third down play, you know, I think it was Mack Wilson's guy that, you know, that was able to get that, you know, that was able to convert that, yep, big play. I mean, they had a third and 13 at our 39 yard line, and he gets a big 25 yarder to get to the 14 yard line. But, you know, on that other play, it was basically a receiver, right? Ryan Davis throwing it to a running back.
Yep.
And the guy that caught the ball, you know, he had about four catches in the past month. He doesn't get a lot of, he doesn't catch a lot of balls. And so both of those plays, Dylan Moses wasn't in the game. They had kept four down linemen or three down linemen and a linebacker with his hand in the dirt. They had had the dime look and they had Mack Wilson in there by himself both of those times. And both of those times, you know, Mack Wilson's is on an island by himself there and, you know, has a lot of ground to cover. And because what I found interesting here, Dave, is that when we did this dime so much, you could say we had a base dime in this game because we really didn't see the nickel hardly at all. And when we did the base dime look, we stayed too deep on the safeties most of the time. Mm-hmm. And so we would, when Auburn went four wides, we would have four DBs covering their wideouts, but yet we still had two safeties over the top. And so that is very interesting that we showed that kind of respect for the deep game. Like we had eight quarterback hurries, right? Because Stidham had nowhere to throw the ball and he had nowhere to throw the ball because we had two guys over the top giving the four guys help.
Right. No, I think that – I don't think we – yeah, I think that, you know, we put a lid on the defense with, you know, the two high safeties. And they – other than sort of the trick plays where they could they were able to sort of move us around that way, they weren't a threat really to attack us down the field, which I was surprised by. I thought, you know, Stidham hasn't had a great season this year. But he still – you know, he is who he is, and he still has an arm. I don't know if he's been hit too many times this year or they have sort of chained him to an offense that he's not really effective running. I don't know what it is, but he still has a capability that they're not using. And so I think that for a little bit we said, look, Sidham's not going to beat us down the field. So we're going to put a lock on that. And then everything else, we'll sort of choke him out underneath you know, for the by and large, that seemed to be the case. We're talking about dime.
But is that why we did the base dime instead of our typical base nickel? Because Auburn had this game thinking, you know, Auburn had to come into this game, you know, prepared for a base nickel look because that's the predominant formation we run, right? But by having those two deep safeties, we forced them to do everything short, and I think that totally messed them up.
No, I agree. I hear what you're saying. I say this kind of tongue in cheek. I don't know that I would go so far as to call it a base dime yet. But I think we were giving them a look that maybe they weren't expecting, and that forced them to sort of reconsider, you know, how they wanted to try to attack us. So I do think that, you know, maybe we were prepared for things that, you know, Auburn had to take off the plate. And that there's a little bit of, and this would be true of any game, there's a little bit of that you never know, right? And so, damn it, we didn't think they were going to come out and dime so much. We had a lot of nickel beaters ready to go, but if they're in dime, we can't run them. And so you just don't know. And so it's a little bit of the prep, and it's a little bit, that's why coaches get paid. And that's why, you know, you make those decisions. And so did we force them away from some plays that they wanted to run? Yeah, probably so. You know, we talk about dime. I don't think we can talk about dime or I'm surprised we've talked about dime this much without mentioning Jerrion Maiden. He went down early, I think in the third with, you know, sort of a head to head, contact. I think it was the right call. I wish, you know, it would have been easy for him to tackle different. So we can talk about that. And we also talked about sort of in the moment at the game, well, who's going to be, you know, sort of running the Rolodex of players, who's going to be the backup dime, which is sort of a niche position anyways. And you know, quickly we got an answer to that. It was Keaton Anderson. So, you know, unpack that wherever you want to go, the hit that Maiden had or Keaton Anderson coming in at dime.
Unfortunately, it was the right call because he looked up, he looked at what he was hitting, but his face mask, you know, clearly landed on the other guy's. It was clearly helmet to helmet. Like you said, had he put that in the chest, dislodged the ball play.
Yep.
And so, you know, that's something he's got to learn from. And this is a kid that, you know, this is a kid out of Texas who, you know, really didn't get a lot of play until the Missouri game. And so he had played, you know, Missouri, Tennessee, LSU, and Mississippi State. And obviously he was in the game plan in this game for this dime look. And so obviously, you know, we're going to miss him in the first half of this Georgia game now.
Yep.
And so it will make you wonder against a talented, you know, passing attack of Georgia, you know, do we go back to the base nickel? Like, I will tell you, to your point, I fully expected, with the lack of depth that this team has at the DB position due to other injuries that has happened, I fully expected us to abandon the dime look and go to the nickel. And this is why I'm not a coach, because they saw an effectiveness with what they were doing, and they had a comfort level of bringing in Keaton Anderson to continue doing what they were doing, and they didn't go away from it.
Right.
Which maybe the score, like, I'd be curious if it was a close game, would they have made that call? Because the game was, you know, that they had the, you know, I mean, I guess I'll pitch this to you. Was it because they had a big margin at that point, and or bigger, you know, it was more than a one touchdown game. So, you know, do they go with Keaton because it's working? Do they go with Keaton because they're like, okay, we got to give Keaton some run because now, you know, now Jared's not going to be playing in the first half of the Georgia game. And if we want to do this look, we got to be able to, you know, get Keaton in the game. You know, do you think all those moving pieces were going through Saban's head?
Yeah, I think they absolutely were. I think, you know, to your point, hey, this is working. We want to continue doing this. We've built some defensive game plan around this. This is what we've practiced. So there's a little bit of that. You know, let's see what, and I say this, you know, a little bit tongue in cheek, let's see what he can do. Look, there's a reason he's not a starter, but he is a senior, and he has played a lot this season, just in sort of call it garbage time, or when the twos come in. So he's played a lot. He's a senior, so he knows his responsibility. And this is, I think, it's one of those classic, I know what my floor is. I know what Keaton's going to do. I know what he can do. And I know that he's consistently going to deliver on that. I can make up for the rest. I can make up for where he might be deficient here or there, because I know what I'm getting from him. You put someone out there that maybe is not as prepped, maybe is not as ready, and then you just don't know what you're going to get play to play to play. And so I just think that's as Saban as it gets. And then you also factor in, you know, if you count Maiden, right? So we're talking dime. So that's six defensive backs. Remember, we replaced the whole secondary, all six, last year. So these are new starters. You take Maiden out and you go to Keaton, that's seven. You take Trayvon and Jalen Amar Davis out on injury, you're nine DBs deep. And so in September, would Keaton have been the backup at dime? No, he wouldn't have been. Probably Maiden would have been, because Trayvon. But here we are, and you could reason that we're nine deep, that Keaton was nine deep in the secondary. And at some point, that you got what you got. And but him being a senior and him knowing the defense, I think we roll with him, you know, as we did in Auburn. We roll with him in the first half of Georgia. We might have less of a game plan around dime, which that's fine, because that's what we've done most of the season. And so we may not have to see him necessarily, and I don't mean that negative, but we may not have to go to dime very often. And so I don't know that there's a lot of lost sleep over Keaton playing dime in a game that we may not need it.
Well, kudos to him, right? It was the second offensive series for Auburn in the second half. Like you said, it was early. We had come out and scored, though, our first two series of the second half, which helped. Right. We had took a 17-14 game to 31-14, and we had done it in 5 minutes. And so I remember, you know, you and I talking in the stands about, hey, we just put two touchdowns on them in 5 minutes.
Yep.
Which also helped. But it was very interesting to me that we stuck with that, you know, like we did. The other thing I'll mention real quick before we do mini game balls is, you know, typical Gus Malzahn with his trick plays. He threw the kitchen sink at them. Okay. Yep. I mean, he had a wide receiver throw a pass. He had a running back throw a pass. He did a flea flicker. The only thing we didn't see was a fake punt and an onside kick. Right. I mean, there were four or five trick plays in this game.
Hang on, though. Was it a fake? I don't know that. I hear what you're saying. I don't know that it was a fake because they did this sort of funky alignment, but they did do a sort of
formation. Yeah.
They put, so I don't know that was a fake, you know, because
yeah, all no, that, the that was tricky dick. That snap. Was tricky dick.
But it yeah, was that a was tricky dick. Yeah.
Because that was their field goal kicker, right? You have a field goal kicker come in motion who then gets the pass. And, you know, on that play, you know, job Patrick Surtain, you know, for drilling him. But, like, I don't know what Gus Malzahn was, what's his drink of choice. I don't know what he was drinking when he came up with that play. Because why in the heck you get your talented field goal kicker of everybody on the team to run in motion and then catch that pass and take a chance of getting a hit like that? I was surprised you put that kid in that situation. But he was coming up with, he could come up and he still got doubled up in the score, which is hilarious.
Yes. That to me is a high school play. And I know when you talk about high school offenses, you know, in college that, you know, that's a pejorative and that's okay. I get it. That to me was just one of those gimmickry, and Auburn does it a lot on even PATs and stuff. And to me, that is high schoolish. And so they do a lot of that. I got to wondering on that play where they moved all those linemen out, and I think they had a sort of guy behind them, and, you know, however they sort of set that up. And then we moved over three defenders. And so I started thinking the math on this doesn't work for them. They've moved over, you know, four or five. They had five linemen or four linemen and a, I don't know, another position player. And so they've got, you know, technically they've got numbers because they've got, you know, 5-on-3. The way they lined up, the lineman at the end of the line was an eligible receiver. And so I start doing math in my head, like, okay, so you've got, you know, sort of five skill position players. I'm going to burn one of them at the end of this line. I'm wasting numbers because I'm not going to run the play over here. I'm going to run it over on the other side. And Alabama's got me outgunned over there. And I'm down to four skill players that can make a play. Just the whole thing, and then I'm going to run a play and it's going to be the kicker. And so you think, well, I'm going to use a kicker because they don't expect the kicker. Well, you know, there's only four other guys they can cover and they've got more than enough people to cover all of them. So it's not going to work. There's no part of that to me. I mean, I guess I'd like to see that in practice and how are they drawing it up and what really, like, I'd like to see that in sort of the sterile environment of how they're trying to design that, because to me, it becomes a math question that doesn't have a good answer. So why would you ever do that?
No, that's true. But much less throw it to your field goal kicker, right? I mean, I was waiting for the onside kick at some point because I was like, okay, we've seen everything else.
I was like, onside kick this one.
Yeah. So I was absolutely shocked that we had not seen that. Well, tell me what anything else on defense before we do mini game ball?
No, give me a mini game ball.
For the reasons we talked about, but I'm gonna give it to Keaton Anderson.
Okay.
Because obviously, you know, he's an unheralded guy. He has to come in a short second notice, and he comes in, he looks very comfortable. We've always talked about these guys being prepared. Yep. They've got their head in the game. He comes in, he's ready to go. There's no, you know, Bama doesn't waste a timeout. They don't call a timeout to go talk to the kid. They just bring him in. And after they review the play, off you go. So just kudos to him for coming in and stepping in and seizing his opportunity.
No, I think you're spot on. I think that there truly is. And I like the way you phrased it. You know, the next guy's always prepared. It's the next guy up, but that rings hollow if the guy can't play and he doesn't know where to line up. And so, you know, and it, you know, hey, the fact that he's a senior helps a lot in that as well. But as soon as Jaden was out, you know, Maiden was out, you know, we sort of turned like, okay, who's the backup dime? And, you know, which is a nuanced question. And, you know, Saban did one of those things where he brings 15 defenders, you know, to the edge of the field. And then, you know, they're going to call out a defensive formation and some of the guys are going to, you know, based on what the offensive does, I just like that as a sort of a scheme anyways. And so they can't look at, hey, Alabama's got this on the field, so we're going to run this play. You take that away from them. And then sort of we get to make the informed decision based on their personnel. I just like little clever little things like that. And so as soon as we ask the question, who's the next dime up, you know, there's the 15 defenders out there. And within like 12 seconds, we're like, well, there's our answer. And we didn't play Keaton that play, but I think we played him the next play. And the fact that he came in ready to play and contributed the way that he did, I think is phenomenal. I had him down as a potential mini game ball. So I'm glad you covered him there. I'm going to go. I had two other sort of ideas I was going to go with. I'm going to go with Shai Carter, and he probably has outgrown, you know, especially relative to Keaton, but he's sort of outgrown the mini game ball. But, you know, he may have had one of his best days just, you know, from beginning to end. You know, he had three tackles, three pass deflections. At least two of the pass deflections were on big third down plays. I know, you know, their receivers dropped the first two passes, and then the third was batted down by Shai. He had another third down that he batted down. It may have been. It wasn't flashy like a pick six, and he's had those before too. But in terms of just covering sort of all the bases, making plays, contributing to the flow of the defense, getting Auburn off the field, which is sort of something Saban is always talking about, Shai may have had his best day, or certainly one of his best days. And so when you got guys like Jennings and Shai Carter having their best days or one of their best days, that's going to bode well for the defense. And tip of the mini game ball to Shai.
Absolutely, man. Well, let's flip the field real quick for the let's flip the field now to special teams. You know, obviously the crowd was very excited, man, that we made a field goal.
Yeah.
Making that field goal was a big deal.
There's a part of me that
and it
said,
was 30 yards.
No,
30 yards.
No, there's a part of me that says that there's a part of me that wants to do this. All of us made a field goal and he made all seven of his PATs. And Mark Bernier averaged 41 yards. Let's not talk about special teams.
No, that's true. That's true, man. The good news for this team is I don't think special teams is going to I just don't see them getting into a close enough game where special teams is going to be an issue.
So
the good news
is
I think they're going to be able to, you know, they're going to be able to keep easing into this. I'll say it that way.
I hope so, right? I mean, the last time we got into a game where special teams could have helped us win it was against Georgia, and you know, we're going up against Georgia. Fortunately, you know, there was a much more climatic ending available for us, but that's what we had. You know, we did talk about, they did their little trickery on, you know, on that kick. That speaks to a preparedness by our special teams, coaching. We've talked about Banks before and that sort of little extra that he gives us. I guess the juxtaposition there is we did allow a blocked punt. And so, you know, that's never fun, but
touch on that for a quick second, because obviously we talk about how great, how well the special teams coach has done, you know, coming from Texas A&M. Punt was blocked on a couple, and we don't punt a whole lot, but it almost seems like that's a coachable thing too. You know, we were letting the guys go at the line of scrimmage, it seemed like, too quickly. And so you had the three back guys, you know, that were the protectors, and there's only so much you can do. And so I think that's going to, so while I hate it happened, I'm glad it happened in this game instead of the Georgia game.
Yes.
Because that will be something that will absolutely be worked on this week.
You know, you're spot on. And so it's one of those things, and we talk about this, right? We talk about, you know, coaches look for things. We can exploit this. We can do this. And so, you know, you can reason that that's something that they put in. We're going to block one of these because we see something and we're going to get after it. And so can you imagine, like, the special teams coordinator on Georgia's coaching staff saying, damn it, we saw that too. And that was not going to be there.
Absolutely.
So you're right. I would
absolutely.
Guess, as much as I didn't like seeing it, I guess I'd rather happen in a 52-21 game than a game where it might impact the difference.
Absolutely. And I guess I'll just point out very quickly, punters are definitely trying to kick it right against the sideline where Waddle cannot do anything.
Yes.
And so obviously he did not have the ability to make a play there. Teams are definitely doing a better job of keeping it away from him because you know, their punter had 7 punts and, but yet, you know, Waddle didn't have any return yards. And so, Auburn did a good job with that.
Yeah. I still say that's something, you're right. That's still something they have to coach up. That's still something they have to put effort in, and that's still something someone's going to mess up. And so, while you can reason that, hey, they've made, you know, the opponents have made adjustments and that's true. I don't think he's done making big plays in a return game.
No, I'm with you. Well, let's talk about this next game in Atlanta, man. Let's talk about the SC championship. How do you think things are going to unshake here with the Georgia Bulldogs in a rematch of the national championship game?
Yeah. You know, I think, you know, this is, I think, going to be the best opponent that we've played all season. I don't think that's really a surprise to anyone. I think they've got the best balance. They've got the best talent that we have faced since their loss to LSU. And sort of that's the common opponent, right? They've lost to LSU and we handled that business. And so I think that speaks to, you know, sort of the core of the two teams. You know, I don't go transitive property on the score and all of that stuff, but I think that Georgia has played better since that loss. And it's, you know, and that's maybe the Saban coming out of Kirby that says, don't waste a loss. Don't waste a failure. We lost this game. Let's learn from it. Let's get better. Let's improve upon it. And so Georgia, in that respect, has done all they could do. Now, is what they are enough to beat Alabama? I don't think so. I really don't. I think they're a stronger running team than they are passing, although, you know, they're capable there. And so that's where they get balance. I think they were a better team last year than they were this year. And I think on the whole, we're a better team this year than we were last year. And I know that's simplifying a lot, but if you're starting somewhere, that's where I think, to me, that's a reasonable starting point. We're better than last year. They're not as good as last year. Okay, now how do these two teams, match up from there? I think the spread.
Your score yet. Hold your score.
Yep. I was going to say,
give me your extra comments, but just hold your score.
Nope, that's fine. I think I'll finish with this. I think the spread is, you know, I think it opened at 10 and it's almost 14. Those start to be big numbers in a contest like this. But I'll hold my score, but I'll say, I think we win, and I'm going to pitch it to you before I say more than I should.
All right. So last year when I was at the national championship game, right, Georgia had 75-80% of the fans in that place. And it was obviously a home game.
Sure.
Big time. Those fans knew they had a chance in this game.
Yep.
I don't think the turnout is quite the same in this game. I think this game will be a little bit more of an even affair.
Yes.
It might be 60-40, 65-35 kind of deal. But I agree with what you said. Georgia's not as good. Alabama's better. Georgia had 24, 25 seniors last year.
Yes.
They've only got 6 seniors in the starting 22. Okay. And we just talked about the 8 quarterback hurries. Well, guess what? Georgia's got one center. Their center is a senior. They got three sophomores and a true freshman at the other four offensive line positions.
Yep.
Okay. And I will tell you, man, while it's a lazy analysis to just look at common opponents and look at scores, there's something to be said to this. Okay. There's something to be said that against LSU, you let LSU score 36 points. Okay. We let them score zero. Against Auburn, you were only able to put up 27 at home, and you won convincingly 27 to 10. We just put up 52 points against Auburn. You put up 27, okay? And then the biggest thing to me is Missouri, man. Missouri's got probably the second quarterback in the draft this year, right? A great quarterback. And in that ball game, you let them score 29 points. You win by two touchdowns. It was not at the game was in doubt until late, and you end up pulling away 43 to 29. We let Missouri score 10. Now, I understand we were at home and Missouri had you at their house. I get all that. But my point is, in three common opponents, Missouri, LSU, and Auburn, the differences in the scores are over 20 points.
Yeah.
Okay. On the offense and defensive side of the ball. So I'm going to tell you that I think we cover the spread easily. And this is going to be a fun game, man. I'm going to surprise you when I tell you this is going to be like a 31 to 10 victory. I think we're going to lay it on them. And if we hurried Stidham eight times, I think we are going to create an absolute nightmare for Fromm. I think this is going to be a disaster for him.
Really? Okay.
I think Fromm is going to get beaten up in this football game.
That is an aggressive take.
Dude, this what you just said a minute ago, if you put them together, because Tua is going to be the quarterback in this football game. Last year, Georgia came in saying we've got to stop the run because we think we can handle the passing game of Alabama. Right now, they're coming into this game saying we can't handle Alabama at all. I actually wanted to do more than 31 points. I think we lay it on them. I really do.
So do you put any – do you pump the brakes at all if you think about now? I'm not counting blowouts last season. In competitive play, Georgia will be the first team to see Tua twice. Does that mean anything?
Kirby Smart's a great coach. I think he's the best assistant Saban's ever had. But there's only, I would say yes. If he didn't have four talented wide receivers, two talented tight ends, four talented running backs.
All the stuff we've talked about, right?
Dude, the only way Kirby Smart could do anything in this game is if they had, 16 defenders playing against 11. I mean, really. I mean, it's the pure numbers. It's just the mass numbers of talent. Now, if Tua gets knocked out of the game and gets injured in the first quarter and Jalen comes in, all bets are off.
Sure.
But if everybody in the football game, and no effing chance.
Wow. All right.
And I think they're going to get beat so bad that they'll get knocked out of the Final Four and they won't get in the playoffs.
I think, I think if they lose, that'll be their second loss. So I do think they're likely out. If it's close, then they would have a case. But they will have no case if your score is on. And I certainly root for it. I'm just going to sit here and look at my my meager 27-16 game. I think their defense slows us down a little bit. I think we slow them down more. And so I think we win. I guess I'm calling an 11-point margin, but that pales next to your 21. Your 21. So,
dude, If I had the wherewithal, I would absolutely I don't want to bet with my team, but
I understand.
For the listeners out there, spread worth looking at. I'll say it that way.
Okay. So I'm going to say this. What I hear from you is reminiscent of when we played. And so this is dated, but when we played LSU the second time that season for the national title game. You and I got together and we watched the 9-6 game, and we probably spent at least 3 hours going through that play, dissecting, you know, plays, you know, going through all the and where things broke down, where things could be corrected. And we both left that thinking and you know, looking at the drive charts and just everything, you know, we broke down for that. And we left that game and we left that sort of prep session thinking that, or that review, thinking there's no way we lose this game. We're going to blow them out. And I what I hear from you is that same type of sort of, I don't want to say like bravado, but confidence. Confidence based on, you know, having looked at the data points. Is that a fair? I mean, do you sense that there's a parallel there?
So, yeah, man, you are hearing me correctly. Last year you had two talented senior running backs for Georgia, two-headed monster, both went high in the NFL draft, a veteran offensive line that was able to protect this young quarterback for Georgia that didn't have to win games for them. Fromm's going to have to win this game for him, for them, and he's not going to be able to do it. And so you are hearing me correctly that I think we handle them with ease in this football game.
Wow. Wow. What do you think about reports that Terrell Lewis may suit up and play?
You know, man, I don't know. You know, kudos to him if he is able to go. Obviously, it would be helpful, right? Obviously, yeah. Him being in the game would be huge. He made some huge plays last year in the national championship game. You know, from an eligibility standpoint, I guess obviously the red shirt is, you know, the red shirt would be off the table. So,
he could redshirt. He can play. The irony is he can contribute in four games without and still be able to redshirt. It's the new rule this year. And so
how many has he played?
Zero.
Okay. So I'm sorry. So I should have known that. So if he's played zero games and he can go then and still redshirt, then absolutely.
Yeah, I agree. I think that, I think, you know, certainly he's a talented player. I don't want to put him out there in a situation sort of in harm's way. If he's not truly ready to go, but if he's ready to go, he's not going to be in sort of midseason form like everyone else. But if he's ready to go and, you know, he can get 6, 8, 9, 12 snaps, then that's just going to have a ripple effect, you know, for the frontline guys, help them stay fresh and ready and help us be aggressive across the defensive front. So
absolutely,
I think it's welcome news if he's available, but I don't think it's something that Alabama needs to necessarily build a game plan around. It's just, you know, for non-Alabama fans, it's just one of those, well, of course they're getting him back
that's true.
Alabama.
That is true, man. But I think this will be a very different game from last year in the dome, in Mercedes Stadium. I think this will be a fun game for Bama fans to watch.
Well, I am rooting for Alabama, and I am rooting for your score certainly there. So anything else sort of we want to hit in closing?
No, man, I think we're good, man. I'm kind of ready for this game to kick off now. I have gotten myself worked up enough that we can just skip the work week and let's just get with it.
Let's get with it. Let's press pause, let the players get healthy and ready and prepped and all that. But yes, I am mentally there.
Yes, absolutely.
Fantastic.
Here we go.
All right. Hey, thanks for tuning in. We appreciate everyone. I think we went long today, but hey, good stuff. And we appreciate you being here with us. As always, reach out to us via iTunes, leave us reviews, comments, questions there. We're still working our way through those. We promise to catch up there. Drop us emails. We try to correspond with every single one of them. And in the meantime, this has been another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Roll Tide.
Thanks for listening to the Alabama Football Podcast. We love that you're tuned in and hope that you enjoyed the show. We encourage you to reach out and let us know what you like, where we can improve, or just a shout out, a Roll Tide. We are where you are. iTunes, Facebook, Twitter, email newsletters, t-shirts, free roster downloads, and of course, on the web at alabamafootballpodcast.com. Check us out where you'll find easy links to your favorite way to follow the Tide. Got that, Coach? Of course, Roll Tide.